Hello, today we're with Jeremy Yost. Jeremy is the founder and co-director of Power Breath Institute. As a master somatic breath therapy practitioner, Jeremy brings together the most effective and clinically sound aspects of the major schools of connected breathing techniques, including rebirthing, transformational breath, holotropic, and Buteyko method. Jeremy served on the board of the Global Professional Breathwork Alliance, an organization dedicated to establishing the ethical and professional standards for breathwork around the world. Jeremy is the driving force behind bringing 21st century therapeutic breathwork to health and wellness community, and he is passionate about making the world a better place, one heart at a time. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you. Hi, Cynthia.
So tell me, how did you get into breathwork or breath therapy?
Well, I guess probably the most obvious reason is I grew up in outside of New York, and I grew up with a father who was slowly dying of emphysema. And so as I was growing up into my teens, I watched someone slowly not be able to breathe. And then probably another 10 years after that, my grandfather died of emphysema. So I'm the breath guy.
Wow.
I became, wow, you know, really, really tuned in to, you know, how my father was breathing and how he wasn't able to breathe. And mm-hmm. It always fascinated me about, you know, how much, you know, people normally breathe and how much they don't breathe and what are the reasons. So that would probably be the most right. obvious answer, I guess, to the question.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think most people breathe?
Well, what's interesting is as I began to learn about breath, and some of my first teachers in, you know, in conscious breathing, as well as some of the pranayama exercises I learned in yoga, was noticing just how shallowly everyone breathes. And, you know, many different kind of sources would probably put it somewhere between 15 and 25% of the respiratory capacity, and that would encompass 80 or 90% of the people, certainly in our Western world. And when you take that and look at some other really key physiological facts, which I would love to see taught in eighth grade, that breath comprises about 2/3 to 70% of the energy for life, not what you eat, and that the exhale is one of the primary ways, is the primary way in the body to release toxins, in addition to perspiration and other forms of elimination. Mm-hmm. So when you look at those pieces of information, you realize, wow, if I'm only breathing even a third or half of my respiratory capacity, what does it say about my energy and how much toxins I'm holding on to?
Wow.
So I would say that the shallowness of most people's respiration is the most obvious thing. And then the other component of, I think, how most people breathe is utilizing what we call suppressions or subconscious resistances to an open, healthy breath, like chest breathing, just belly breathing, abdominal breathing, shallow breathing, fast breathing, even one that is probably also pretty widespread, and that's over-breathing, a tendency to breathe in and out of the mouth excessively for a variety of different reasons and causing a alkaloid condition in the respiratory bloodstream.
Wow.
So when you look at that, and, you know, over the years of probably 30-some-odd years of doing this work, I get a lot of people that come to me as clients or students that say, you know, I just know that I don't know how to breathe, but, you know, I don't even know what really I'm supposed to be doing with the breath.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it initially, Cynthia, is like education. It's like getting people mm-hmm. to understand the basic respiratory physiology and that the breath in the body, in the human body, is not just a rib cage function, but it's actually something that involves lots of different muscle groups from the throat all the way to the pelvis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as we were talking a little bit before the call, I was saying, you know, I've had a little bit of breathwork training, but for some reason, and completely subconsciously, when I drive, I find that I shallow breathe, and I have to correct myself and say, wait a minute, why am I doing this?
Exactly.
Why would I do that?
Exactly. And you know, you are so not alone. In fact, with all of the different attention-grabbing devices we have in our 20th and 21st century world, it's a wonder that we even remember to take a deep breath at all. One of the interesting things about this whole idea of correcting our breath, conscious breathing, and why it's probably going to be, you know, at some point realized culturally that conscious breathing or open, healthy breathing is probably the number one thing you can do towards helping yourself come back to integration and wellness, is that the main thing that we have in terms of breathing is that our attention, with neuroscience coming in and supporting this, that our attention is being drawn in a number of different ways, looking at computers, cell phones, texting, traffic patterns. You know, long gone are the days when we do one thing at once and then go and sit on the porch and watch the world go by. You know, I think porches are going to be a thing of the past in many ways.
I hope not, because I really want one.
So neurologically, you know, if you look at the evolution of our nervous system, as especially in Dr. Stephen Porges, who is the author of the polyvagal theory, talks about very eloquently, we're designed to stop breathing when there's a threat, or even when there's a new thought or an experience that we have to integrate into our nervous system and into our bodies. So when you hear something, just like your pet dog or cat, when they hear an unusual sound, they stop breathing, perk up all their senses, the heart rate increases, slight increase in blood pressure, and all of the neurological function is turned towards that fight, flight, or sympathetic nervous system response. And as a part of that response, there's a cessation of breath. Now, if you're just integrating a thought or traffic pattern or something like that, no big deal. The respiratory system says, oh, excuse me, the pH balance in your blood is getting a little off. Remember, you've got to breathe now. And so you come back to breathing. But if the threat turns out to be something that can't be managed, let's say early childhood or birth even, and you know, later in life with you know, car accidents, or if you're a veteran going into war, that chronic suppression of the breath is the result of the inability to process neurologically an overwhelming experience. And the word for that in the field is called trauma. You know, most people don't think that they've been traumatized, but really it's just an overwhelming experience, like falling off a bike as a child without anyone there to support you. You actually shut down your breath to minimize the feeling in your body and to minimize pain. So chronic pain avoidance or suppression leads to chronic breath suppression as well, especially the part of the breath that is, you know, we engage when we're feeling safe, and that is in the belly using the diaphragm. And I think this is probably the main reason why, and how I was taught and what my colleagues around the world, you know, how we approach people who have chronic respiratory suppression.
Wow. So by not breathing correctly, you're causing a lot of physiological things to happen in your body. You're saying the pH level in your body goes off. What other kind of effects?
You have, believe it or not, you have not one, which is the main one is in the brainstem and the medulla oblongata, which regulates the pH of the blood and tells the sympathetic and the muscular system to breathe or faster or more or stop breathing, we have other systems in the body and the brain that regulate respiration. That respiration, if we're frightened, this is kind of a general rule of thumb. If you tend to breathe more up in the chest, you tend to activate more of the stress kind of breathing, the fight or flight or sympathetic nervous system breathing. If you're more belly breathing, there's more of this parasympathetic, the rest and digest part of the nervous system, and there's a big cluster of it, a vagal nerve cluster in the gut. So if you're breathing with your diaphragm or belly breathing, you're stimulating that, causing a relaxation response in the body. I'm not saying that all belly breathers are really mellow or lazy or couch potatoes, but what I'm saying is that we have to feel really safe, you know, on a moment-to-moment basis, or be able to have the awareness that we're holding tension in our bodies before our diaphragm naturally kicks in and initiates, you know, what we call an open, healthy breath, which is about two-thirds mm-hmm. belly or diaphragmatic and one-third chest.
Right.
And I would say most people do the reverse.
Yeah, most people are chest breathing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if most people aren't breathing correctly, so that could that cause things like being fuzzy-brained, and you're saying turns out the pH balance. What other kind of effects does it have?
Right. Okay. So it is, I have to say, it's probably because the breath or the air touches everything. When you don't breathe correctly in the body, it touches almost every system in the body. Number one, the attention, the nervous system begins to respond differently. And if you overbreathe, you tend to not only get an alkaloid condition in the blood, but it causes an acidic condition in the body, which has been shown to, you know, be precursors to certain cancers. You want to keep mm-hmm. an alkaline condition in the body and a perfect pH balance, 7.4 in the blood. Your kidneys will actually start excreting bicarbonates to try to create a better pH balance. So the kidneys begin to be stressed and used. They're directly tied to adrenal function, adrenal stress, high blood pressure, tachycardia, arrhythmias in the heart, feelings of panic, and all of the stuff that's associated with stress and anxiety, from asthma to panic attacks to lack of concentration, attention deficit problems. I mean, it's almost like, you name it,
that's incredible.
It's probably
going
to be at some point a respiratory source to what you're struggling with. And number one, of course, I should mention, is that the full open respiration is directly tied to heart health and the importance of, you know, stimulating and massaging so-called the pericardial muscles that make the heart healthy. This was actually done some research on this in Stanford, and it was in the last century, where people who had families that were genetically inclined to heart disease, case study, half were taught diaphragmatic breathing, the other half were just monitored. I think it was a 12 or 15-year study, and sure enough, the people who were taught diaphragmatic breathing, just learning how to use the muscle that your body is designed to use for breath, learning to do that consciously and sort of making a positive habit out of diaphragmatic breathing reduced the risk of heart disease by over 50%. I think it was like 55% in the 15-year study. So
just
your heart
breathing.
Health
That's
is
incredible.
Huge. We know that this is really, really important. And some of the more recent discoveries in my field have been about how the full movement of the diaphragm creates and stimulates heart health. And on the other side of the formula, the heart math people in California have done a lot of research on this as well.
Mm-hmm. Incredible.
So, it's tied to a lot of fatigue, chronic fatigue, immunological difficulties, poor digestion. The diaphragm moves down like a coffee press filter in your gut and pushes down on all the organs. All of your internal organs are being massaged with every diaphragmatic movement. So, you know, if you're not breathing in your belly, or if you're breathing with your abs, which are on the surface of the belly, not underneath or behind the organs, you're not getting that same kind of digestive movement. I even saw, I think this was probably 10 years ago now, but an infomercial on breathing, diaphragmatic breathing for weight loss. That
wow.
The breathing with your diaphragm, because of its interaction with digestion and all the
mm-hmm.
peripheral systems,
yeah.
created, you know, there was this infomercial talking about how it creates immediate weight loss, which makes sense because you're going to get more oxygen, there's going to be more efficient,
yes.
you know, burning
mm-hmm.
in the Krebs cycle, et cetera.
And it takes you out of fight or flight.
Yeah,
the
right.
Stress.
Takes
right.
you out of fight
yeah.
or flight. And stress
Absolutely.
Is the number one thing in our society right now. So, you
Absolutely.
Know, we have to do something to lower our stress levels. And I just said, you know, breathe diaphragmatically and,
yeah.
you know, and relax the exhale. That's the
Absolutely.
Other one I tell people.
So what is somatic breath therapy then?
So consciously utilizing the breath has been around for thousands of years. And, you know, it's been brought even to more awareness in the last few decades because of yoga coming from the East and doing these what they call conscious breath exercises or pranayama. In the Western world, the sort of using breath as a therapeutic tool started to emerge with Ilse Middendorf in the 40s and 50s and Wilhelm Reich, and then kind of grew into North American popularity in the 60s and 70s with Leonard Orr rebirthing and Dr. Stanislav Grof with holotropic breathwork. Where I began was an offshoot of rebirthing in the 80s and then went through several different trainings and made it a point because it was just fascinating to me to explore different breath modalities. Every person, you know, every teacher that was using the primary idea of if you breathe in a connected fashion, it has a therapeutic benefit to the body and the person, has gone off in their own kind of way and you know, either stuck with the basic rebirthing models or the holotropic models that are out there and taught worldwide. One of the things that was important for me because of my background and you know, having the ancestral lung weakness was to how do we use the breath therapeutically to heal trauma and to, you know, to recapture basically what breath we lost because of unresolved or, you know, non-integrated events from our past.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me on a journey that was more in the psychotherapeutic realm, psychology kind of being my background, rather than just like let's go to a weekend and have a spiritual experience where we can, you know, either, you know, get in touch with our birth and what was, you know, maybe wasn't, you know, integrated from our birth to all the way to the other extreme of let's have what they call a go-to-God experience and, you know, and reconnect with our faith and our, you know, our spiritual practice. For me, it was more in the psychological, emotional, and therefore the somatic or physical realm of how can we use this tool to, you know, to really benefit people on a day-to-day basis. And so this is the direction that I went into and then, you know, fairly recently identified it as a therapy, and especially in light of all the somatic therapeutic techniques that have come out in the last three decades, really, and called somatic breath therapy. So how it's the same is that we use breath as the primary tool, and we use the breath in a very intentional way. In other words, when you're walking down the street or you're having a cup of coffee with a friend, you're sitting there and the breath goes in and there's usually no pause at the top of the breath. The exhale goes out and there's a natural pause at the bottom of the breath. And that pause is really important. That that maintains the pH level that we were talking about in the bloodstream. But if you were to eliminate that pause, and with intention, and with the in a safe environment with somebody hopefully who knows what they're doing in terms of what can happen, that circular or connected breathing creates a very specific kind of therapeutic state in the body that within 3 to 5 minutes, you'll notice that you're getting lightheaded, you're kind of maybe getting dizzy. Of course, we don't do this, Cynthia, driving or operating that front end loader that you like to operate. Just kidding. Yeah, so somatic breath therapy, what I was just trying to get to this point, admittedly a little circuitous, and the using the breath consciously has the ability to create a therapeutic state in the body that is, you know, create a kind of a physiological and neurological state in the body that's conducive for healing. The most common thing that I hear in my therapy office is, I thought I worked through that already. And what more and more neurological research, as well as, you know, therapeutic research is showing, is that there's an indelible somatic component to most traumas and events that we haven't fully integrated in our past. And that to, even though to start it with cognitive therapy and different cognitive tools, you've got to really get into the emotional body, which is directly connected physiologically and neurologically to the physical body. And so, the design of my practice and what I teach my students is how to use breath not only for mindfulness and relaxation, but, you know, and stress release, but also to use it therapeutically for people who are struggling with PTSD or, you know, loss or relationship issues or whatnot.
So people can do certain breath exercises at home, but there comes a point where somebody should actually see a practitioner. So what point is that?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I think that based on what's happened in our, you know, current culture with, you know, awareness of body and energy health, as well as really importantly, mindfulness, there's lots of different techniques that you can do from mindfulness, which is basically just redirecting your attention toward an object, a sound, or especially just the movement of breath in the body, and that's certainly one of the first things that I teach. There's another breath exercise that I teach right after that, which is called coherent breathing, which is basically learning to practicing regulating your inhale and your exhale to 5 or 6 breaths a minute, which means that you're slowly drawing, this is in and out of the nose, slowly drawing the air in the nose for a count of 5 or 6 seconds, and then exhaling for the same amount of time, 5 or 6 seconds, again with no pause. And the heart mass folks teach this. Stephen Elliott has a whole site on coherent breathing. There's some psychiatrists who are spreading this around the world. It's really becoming more and more well known as probably the most accessible connected breathing tool that creates sympathetic and neurological balance in the body. And you're not going to have to worry about, like, oh, what if, you know, something comes up that I can't handle. There's a few other exercises like that. Dr. Andrew Weil has one, a 478 relaxation breath. And there's a number that I have on that I teach on the website as well. But I think that getting, just putting any attention and intention into your breathing is going to have a positive benefit. I mean, mindfulness now, the research is just showing this in terms of your ability to regulate stress and day-to-day living stuff, right?
So, I mean, there are daily practices that people can do, and you're talking about Yeah, so and you're talking about connected breathing, and and there's a point where you don't want to do that connected breathing unless you're with a professional, just in case things come up.
So I think what I generally say, Cynthia, is like, if you breathe for 5 to 10 minutes, connected breathing in and out of the nose, either at a rhythmic rate or just allowing yourself to take slow, full, deep breaths with a relaxed exhale, you're not going to really get yourself in trouble. When you start breathing in and out of the mouth, which brings more air, more oxygen, there's a greater energy shift in the, you know, the neurophysiology of the body. That, and if you do that longer than 5 or 10 minutes, that's when things start to move that, you know, for a person who's never had the experience can be quite disconcerting. And that's
so,
when
so, you know, when a practitioner
that understands, these are the various things that we look for, and I'm basically becoming like a neurological respiratory coach in terms of how to coach your breath more in the direction of, you know, an undistressed breath, and to watch and witness and allow for the neurophysiology of the body to begin integrating. See, there's kind of like this inner healer that happens, and you know, that we all have. That, it, and if you understand how the body works, especially with respiration to integrate experience, you can guide a person towards not something that you're telling them to do, but actually towards themselves, towards their own inner capacity to heal and to integrate, you know, past events.
Wow. So yeah, at some point, you know, if somebody has something that they're going through, it can be some grief or some trauma or whatnot, then, you know, if they wanted to take the breath therapy further, it would be beneficial to see a practitioner at that point.
Right, exactly.
So, if somebody was a big... So go ahead.
One of the focuses that I'm doing right now is working with therapists and sort of breaking conscious breathing down into some pretty simple exercises that are a little bit more engaging than mindfulness, just watching the breath, and even a little bit more engaging than coherent breathing that they can, you know, therapists can use with their clients or practitioners can use with their clients that will help and assist whatever work they're doing, cognitively, energetically, physically. That, you know, this thing is like breath connects us all. Breath is in, you know, part of every system of the body just about.
Absolutely.
And all of the techniques that I've become aware of through the psychotherapy network are supported by, you know, understanding that the breath is self-regulating, that every breath you take is regulating the nervous system of the body, which regulates all the other systems.
Fantastic. So if, you know, if you were a beginner and you wanted to do something, what are some exercises that you might recommend for a beginner?
Well, for a very beginner, I would say the first thing that you want to do is spend a few minutes a day, 5 minutes a day if possible, watching the movement of your breath. Without any intervention, just redirecting your attention towards the movement of the breath. This is basic breath awareness, mindfulness technique. And the reason for that is because conscious breathing has two words, conscious and breathing.
Yeah.
That just breathing isn't enough, and just being conscious isn't enough. But if you train your attention, which is takes, you know, in John Kabat-Zinn's mindfulness-based stress reduction course, takes about 8 weeks. If you train your attention, what you're doing is you're going to be giving yourself the sort of an awareness ability to witness what's happening inside of your body. That's kind of the first step. The second step would be the coherent breathing, which starts working with balancing the neurological system and other systems of the body, especially the heart, and that is, you know, might make you lightheaded, but it's certainly going to help you be, you know, after breathing that way, for if you do get lightheaded in the first minute or two, your body regulates within, 30 seconds of the five-minute exercise, mm-hmm. and you're going to feel more centered, and you're going to feel more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
The next kind of breath technique that I use is what I'm calling the relax and recenter breath, and it's an 18-minute video that I offer on the website as a free gift for people who are interested in learning more mm-hmm. about the breath. Sometimes I refer to it as the 4x4 breath because it's four different breath techniques combined together, so it's like 16 breaths total, and it's a entryway into meditation and or a standalone exercise to really get you back to center. It just takes a couple of minutes to do. It takes a lot more time to explain how to do it, and that's all in the video. But
mm-hmm.
once you devise the practice of it, it's probably the best breath exercise that I've developed in my career.
Mm-hmm. So by doing, a breathing exercise, even though it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, doing
yep.
something that like that daily is going to help your overall health and definitely
help
you
your
with
health
stress.
Immensely. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it'll help relieve stress
it's
and it'll
change. It's going to affect your how your heart functions and well. And I think it's 20 or 21 days of doing
mm-hmm.
a 5 minute breath exercise is what. Kind of coming out of the research right now is the number of days in a row where they can actually begin to measure the effect physiologically.
Wow. Incredible. Thank you
so
much
for
sharing
five
your time
for
today.
20 days.
5 minutes a day.
I mean,
that's definitely minimal,
5 minutes,
isn't it?
Cynthia.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your time today.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks.